This list sucks. Good thing we don't have to talk about that fucking list today, huh?
Yeah, because it sucks, and we decided to take a little break from it.
Yeah. I'm Mike.
As we're taking a break from life in general this weekend, I'm JB.
This is Loosey Goosey.
That's right.
That's how it goes, though. So JB moved, and yeah, he lives in a camper now.
Yeah, this is where I live.
In a parking lot.
In a camper, in a parking lot. There are other campers here. I'm not sure what's going on.
It's a nomad lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's like Nomadland or
not
whatever that fucking movie is.
Yep.
Okay, so it's not Friday. It's not even Saturday.
Is it Sunday today?
It's Sunday.
Might be our first Sunday podcast. Never miss a Sunday podcast.
Never miss a Sunday podcast.
That's right.
Okay, so special episode this week in that we are going to be talking about fish.
Yes.
Because JB and I and a whole bunch of our bestest friends, like Justin and Sean,
who are also here with us. You might not be able to see them in the camera, but we have special guests, Justin Jantis and Sean Smith.
Yep. Say hi.
Say hi, guys.
Hi, this is Justin.
Hi, I'm Sean.
Hi, guys.
What's happening?
Okay, so we all decided to lose our minds and come see fish at Deer Creek. So that's where we're at. We're live broadcasting, but we have been talking about doing a special fish episode for a long time.
Yes.
So we decided what better place than at the lot in a hot, sweaty camper than to talk about fish.
Yeah.
It just seems fitting.
We planned this ahead of time. We're like, you know what we should do is turn the AC
off
in the camper while we do the podcast.
All the
so we can really sweat it out and have like some kind of podcast revival.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a hoedown.
Yeah.
Cue Nelly Kane.
Boom.
They already played it. They're not going to play it again.
They're not going to play repeats. It again. Yes.
Okay, so this is going to be a quick episode because we're really hot in this camper.
Yes.
But
We wanted to check in, but we
lined up an ambitious show.
Yes.
So we're just going to work through as much as we can because
exactly.
In our minds, fish got fucked by not having any entries on this list, which, spoiler alert, there's no fish on this list, which we've already talked about. So our three most plausible fish albums that we thought could have been on the list, we're going to talk about.
Yes.
The first one we're going to talk about is Jinta, which was the first studio album that Fish made.
Exactly.
The next one that we're going to talk about is the first live album that they released, which is appropriately titled A Live One.
A Live One.
And then the last thing we're going to talk about, the last album we're going to talk about is the 1995?
96, I think.
Yeah, the 96 release of Billy Breeze.
Which
a lot of people, I think, would argue is Fish's most accessible just because it's basically a hard rock album.
Really. Yeah, and it's just their most cohesive studio effort.
Yeah.
You could say.
Absolutely.
The most layering. Just it's really like a lot of the other Fish records are just Fish playing.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Billy Breeze is more of an actual studio effort where you can, you know, they did lots of overdubs and
lots of
things that they can't do in a live setting. So.
Yeah. And then if we're not absolutely melted at that point in time, we did pick out a couple of like our favorite Fish like editions of songs.
Yes.
And maybe we'll get to those. Maybe we won't. They might just become honorable mentions.
They might be. Yeah.
We'll have to see what happens.
We might be a situation where at the end of the podcast, we say, hey, if you're looking to get into Fish, here are some legendary live versions of songs that you should check out. And we'll just do a little brief talking about each one, but
We're
not going to probably dive too deep just because of logistical time issues.
Yeah.
Like and
we're at a real place.
Issues. Yes.
Well, sweat and time, right?
Yes.
Probably time more than anything. Cause some of us want to get poster prints.
Yes.
they got shut out yesterday because not all of us got shut out yesterday. Bastards. Okay. So listen, let's jump right in. Jinta. You want to go?
Jinta. I love Jinta. So, the cool thing about Jinta is it is mostly composition based, you know, which is like almost the opposite of what people think when they think Fish. You know, I feel like the layman or in the Fish world, so someone who's not familiar with Fish, except for marginally, has this preconception about Fish that they're just like a hippie drug band and they just jam all night and they're just mindlessly noodling and there's no musical thought to what's going on, which honestly, if you think that, that could not be farther from the truth. And I hope that you'll listen and allow your mind to be changed. And the perfect record to do that is Junta.
Is Junta.
Because it is full of these long, complex, ambitious compositions that these guys wrote at a young age.
Yeah.
And there are songs that remain staples to this day in their live catalog.
Literally, so You Enjoy Myself, which is probably the most, I mean, at least in the Fish community, it's got to be like the most well-known Fish song, I would think.
One of them, yeah.
Because it's a lot of people's absolute favorite. I mean, mine probably included, like, You Enjoy Myself was one of the first songs I absolutely fell in love with, and that is just a mind-bendingly long composition.
And it starts off with basically 3 minutes of straight classical fugue-style music with Trey Anastasio, who's a guitar player, just kind of ripping these crazy classical arpeggios up and down and, like, a really rich harmonic chord progression to back it up. And then it from there, it just devolves into kind of like a funk section.
Yeah.
And
the entire buildup to that funk section is what I think makes that the discerning. It gets you all uncomfortable with that rising chromatic buildup after all that orchestrated stuff. And the screen creeps in.
Boy.
Once that drops into that funk groove, it's smooth as hell.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those songs that, I don't know, there's so many twists and turns that it becomes a road less traveled that if you travel it enough times, you know every little turn like the back of your hand.
Oh, yeah.
And it just becomes utterly magic. In addition to You Enjoy Myself, there's so many memorable songs on this record just because of how silly they are and how goofy they are. You know, I think about Fee. Like, yeah. Fee must be it's got to be one of the greatest stories. Like, it's just such a just wonderful silly. Story.
How do they come up with this kind of stuff?
You know? Exactly. Like, how did they pick the animals? Why was Floyd a chimpanzee?
Why was Fee a weasel?
Yeah.
Who's also a Buddhist prodigy.
Exactly. What's your favorite cut?
That's what I'm pulling up the track listing right now. So ask Sean or Justin first.
What you got? What's your favorite cut on Junta?
I'd have to go with You Enjoy Myself just because that's what I got hooked on first. Like, I'm new to the band, so being a newbie at my first Fish show, first Fish run, that was the one that I attached to most. But back to what JB was saying about how a lot of new people to this band kind of incorporate them as just being like the drug band, big jammy, flowy stuff. This album is what I always personified Fish as in my brain. Like, every time I thought about Fish or was like thinking about getting into them, it was all Junta that I heard in my head when I was thinking about, like, that orchestrated compositional stuff. Like, yeah, it's super, super impressive, but I don't think I was mentally ready at that point in my life to dive in. And
yeah,
that's what you have to do with this band. You have to just be ready to take in shit that you have not heard yet. You know what I mean? Whether you like it or not, whether it's music that you listen to on a daily basis, fucking go see this band live. If you have a chance to do this once ever in your life, see them, you'll get it. Promise you.
It really is a unique experience.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Absolutely so.
Unique is an understatement.
Yeah.
I'm still processing the last 2 days.
Understatement of the century.
I think mine would be You and Draw Myself.
Yeah.
I mean, honorable mentions to Esther, Golgi Apparatus. I could give an honorable mention to every other song, you know.
Yeah.
But Fluffhead, David Bowie.
Okay,
Contact.
So then let's redirect this because, again, we're all fans at this point. And so it's not going to be a question of, you know, do we think you should listen to this record?
Yeah,
we do. I think that the conversation maybe instead of just like what we always do, starred songs, they're all starred, folks.
They're all
starred. What's the argument for putting this record on the list? Why is it a snub?
I would say just because of like the complexity and the intensity of the compositions, the compositional work that's on it. I mean, even for just that reason, that it really proves the haters wrong when it comes to Fish, you know? Like, that's the biggest complaint that I feel like the mainstream crowd has against that. And this, if there's one album you could put on the list to to, you know, bring this music to more people, this would be one that as soon as they listen to this, they'd be like, oh, wow, that's not what I expected, you know?
So I'm going to go ahead,
I was just going to say, look, like, this list sucks. Probably the number one reason, because Fish is not on it. When you come down to putting this album on there, the orchestration, the compositions, the talent, that's what this list is supposed to be about, I think. You know, we're talking about 500 of the best albums of all time.
Yeah.
And you haven't put the best band on the planet on it?
Seriously. Come on. Seriously, the come best on. Band on. And that's what's crazy is everybody that I've ever gone to, like, with their first Fish show, that's almost like the universal reaction is at some point in time during the show, like, you look around at each other, and I've heard it, like, our friend Ryan said that at Bonnaroo on Friday night, the first time he saw him. You literally just shake your head and you think, these guys are the best. This is the best band on the planet. Is what it seems like, you know? It's crazy.
Shout out to my buddy Jay. Like, we've been seeing shows for 20 years together, and, like, that's his thing.
Yeah.
He just, like, turns to you during these songs, and, like, especially something like Fee, and he's just, like, as soon as it starts, you know, best band on
best
the
band
planet,
on the planet, man. You know?
One thing I do, so have I been pronouncing Junta wrong for Junta. 20 years?
So I was saying it, okay, so here's the deal. I was saying it Junta as well, but I was listening to End of the Road, Kings of the Road, something like that. There was another podcast that was a seasonal podcast, and they just, Long May They Run. Long May They Run is the name of the podcast, where season two was all about Fish. And they actually talked about Junta, and they referenced where it's from. So it's actually like a friend of the band, and his nickname was Junta. And that's how they said it, literally Junta.
Yeah, because I've gone back and forth over the years, too.
I have, too. But as soon as I heard that explanation of why they named the album that and where the name of the album came from, I no longer say Junta. Like, yes. It's Junta. So
it has nothing to do with, there's like a military something. No. And that's
there is. Junta. That's pronounced Unta or Junta. Right. But this is more of a nickname.
It's a
just
nickname
similar to similar to, like, in the song Golgi Apparatus, they pronounce it Golgi Apparatus. I think it's a similar idea. What about you, Mike? Why do you think this album belongs on the list?
Here's my thing. So as we've been going through this list, the thing that I love the most about this, even though this list sucks, is every once in a while you uncover this record that you've never heard before, and it totally changes what you think about musical styles. And two albums really stand out in my mind that have absolutely floored me. Sparks, Kimono My House, and Junta and Kimono My House, like, those two feel like they're almost cut from very, very similar cloths, from, like, the goofiness that comes
from
both bands.
The whimsicality, the silliness,
But not just that. Really good music.
Intense musicianship.
Intense, really, really wonderful music. And I feel like, again, nobody, if you're not listening to Fish already, it's because they're noodlers, like, those guys that just jam. No, I don't, like, I like songs. I like songs. This is an album full of songs that you can really, really, if you just surrender to the flow, they're really, really wonderful.
Well, yeah. I think that'll be another conversation to come back to when we get to Billy Breeze. Like,
yeah.
All those songs are, I think if you like just straightforward songs, those presentations are probably your good entry point.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into Billy Breeze. Let's do that one next.
Yo, you want to do Billy Breeze next?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So Billy Breeze was an album that was released in 1996, which is what, 7 years after Junta?
Yeah.
7 years after Junta. So quite a bit more mature of a sound, I would say. And this is the one that we were talking about before. I think this was on maybe the YouTube clip only, but this is their album that is basically considered to be their strongest studio effort, I think, critically, by the mainstream kind of music crowd, because of just the level of layers that they put on it, and they really gave it an actual studio treatment. And I'm just saying this again, reiterating it, because I don't think it was on the actual podcast. I think it was just when we were still on YouTube, but hadn't started the podcast yet. But a lot of Fish's albums are just Fish recorded, you know, Fish playing, doing what they do, which is fantastic. If you're a Fish fan, but they don't necessarily always do, you know, push the limits of what you can achieve in a studio setting. But on this album, they do. So, what do you think about Billy Breeze?
I love Billy Breeze, but here's the thing. Here's my beef. When you have a really, really intensely produced album, which Billy Breeze is,
yeah,
it leads to problems in live performances.
Definitely.
Should we all pretend like we're fish singing the chorus of Free?
Free!
And it's a wonderful song, and I love it. And even when they play it, even though like it's kind of cringy sometimes because three-part harmonies are, spoiler alert, really, really difficult,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's still a wonderful song. And ultimately, where I fall with Billy Breeze is if you wanted to intentionally be inclusive of Phish on this list and put a Phish entry on this list that would appeal to the mass audiences,
that's Billy Breeze.
It's Billy Breeze. Because it's real. I mean, it's a rock album with surprisingly...
There's still that orchestrated feel to it. You know what I mean? There's,
yeah, it doesn't lose that compositional
yeah.
quality to it at all.
No.
It's maybe not as fleshed out and as prolific throughout the album as it is on Junta. Almost every song is like a longer, you know, almost yes. 10-minute plus
nothing.
Composition.
Yeah, and nothing is that long on Billy Breeze. The longest track on Billy Breeze, I think... Is Billy Breeze maybe the title track?
What's it, like five minutes?
Well, like 5.5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
But interesting note.
That's wrong. Theme from the Bottom is 6 minutes and 24 seconds.
Okay.
My bad. Thank you.
Jeez.
Production manager Justin coming in strong this week.
Yeah.
Where were you every other show?
Yeah, when we fucked everything else up.
Not there.
Not there. What the fuck was I going to say? I lost it.
Talking about the track lengths.
Well, we were just talking about composition on Billy Breeze in comparison to Junta. I mean, you get, and again, you still have a lot of these songs that are still live staples today. And another cool thing about Billy Breeze in my eyes is that you start to get songs from other members of the band. Like you get Train Song, which is a great Mike song. Mike is the bass player, and he wrote Train Song, and it's a great little tune. Whereas Junta was mostly Trey. Trey mostly did the composing on Junta.
I'm so sorry. I'm apoplectic at this point. Earlier in the day, I tried to cut the top of a champagne bottle off. It blew up all over my shirt. Now I can't even drink a White Claw without putting... some of this White Claw all over my shirt.
It's a good spot for it.
I'm just completely apoplectic with my ability to fucking consume beverages at this point.
Yeah.
You want a sippy cup?
No, I do not need a sippy cup. Okay, so can you name the album? Okay, I want to back up. I want to set this up a little bit better. Phish is notorious for playing almost every song in their repertoire all the time. I mean, not all the time. They have rare ones and bust outs and stuff like that.
But they don't play the hits like you. When you go see a Phish show, you're not going to see any one song each night.
Each night,
absolutely not. They cycle through their massive repertoire, which is 500 songs deep.
And there's no set list. Like Trey has said multiple. Like Trey is really the orchestrator of this, right? He's the orchestra of this mad band, and as the conductor of said orchestra, like he goes out, he looks at the crowd, and I think this is what the crowd needs. Which is really insane to think about when you think about how many songs they perform. But there is a track on Billy Breeze released in 1996 that wasn't played for the first time until 2018. And it was I think it was a New Year's run of 2018.
Was it Steep?
No, come on.
On Billy Breeze.
You give up?
No, I don't give up. Was it Talk or Swept Away?
No, Steep and Swept Away.
So was it Talk?
Nope.
Bliss?
Bingo.
Okay.
Bingo. Talk about the bust out of all bust outs, right?
Has to be, yeah.
If you were at that show, you'd just be like, what is this?
You wouldn't even know what it was.
You would have no clue. But
unless you had listened to Billy Breeze that day. Because it's a really quick, short song. It's like,
yeah, it's just a couple minutes.
It's mostly instrumental, too, right?
Yeah, there's no words in there.
And it's just acoustic guitar.
Yeah, it's like an acoustic lead up. I thought that was an interesting tidbit, though. Like, that's such a random-ass piece of fish trivia. So,
and that's kind of, like, one of the cool things about Billy Breeze is they have, like, that song is really not even a song. It's more of, like, a short interlude between songs, you know? So that's kind of one of the ways that they give this album the studio treatment, which,
yeah,
while you're totally right in saying that a lot of this stuff is hard to pull off live the way they do it in the studio, I like it. I like that they were like, you know what, let's take one album and let's give it the full studio treatment. Let's see what we can actually do in the studio rather than just kind of recording what we already do live. Let's see what we can do differently in the studio, push the limits of recording capabilities and see what we can come up with.
Yeah.
And, it does lead to logistical issues in a live setting, but I think it makes for a cool piece of art. And I like Billy Breeze. I could see this one on the list for sure.
I agree with that. And I would just like to shout out to Prince Caspian, my favorite track.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of those songs that just live, I think, what are you hoping they play tonight?
No. I would love to see a Caspian. No, but it like talking about Prince Caspian triggered another like odd piece of trivia, and that was that I also uncovered that on this record, did you know that Strange Design was actually cut in the studio, and it was going to be the last track after Caspian on this record? But basically, after they had recorded it, Steve Lillywhite, who produced this alongside Fish, everybody talked about it, and they were like, no, don't do it.
It's not on any studio?
No.
Unreleased.
They have it canned. Like, they did it. They did a studio cut on it, and they did it during these sessions, but they were like, no,
be cool to get your hands on that somehow.
It would be kind of sweet. Hmm. We need a new white tapes.
Right.
With, like, all these unreleased shit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't not put Billy Breeze on the list.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I wouldn't do it. This record, for me personally, is the hardest one to come up with a really good case for including it on this list. Because again, for me, I'm going with the introduction factor and like the importance of introducing people to different genres that kind of break away, right? And that's why I would probably put Junta.
Yeah.
Either way, I think it's just a good example, like you said, of being able to introduce people to it.
It is.
It's a reason why they should be included. Maybe not that specific album to everybody, but it's a good introductory reason why.
Yeah, and I like talking about it just because if we have listeners out there that aren't into Fish because of everything that we've talked about, Junta could be really, really intimidating. Billy Breeze is not.
No, super Billy Breeze accessible. Is easy. It's maybe like 40 minutes long or something
Yeah.
And that just adds to it. The fact like even like I was saying earlier about putting aside your whole, you know, music preference and opening up to the band. If Junta's not your thing, there are plenty of albums that you can find to settle in on something that you will like. There was something for everybody.
Perhaps though. Oh, go ahead.
You know, so we're not going to talk about all of Fish's albums, you know, during this, but if I can just say like, so they've evolved over the years, especially in the last, you know, 10 years, right?
Yeah, very much.
Things are very different, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend Big Boat, but their newest one, Sigma Oasis, I think is actually very accessible.
Very accessible and tremendous. The only other record that I think gives a studio hint to the way that Fish creates their improvisational sections is on Sigma Oasis, particularly with Everything's Right. That cut that they made of Everything's Right for that record is outstanding. And it really kind of shows you like where the band goes whenever they explore some of these nooks and crannies within their songs.
Yeah, that was like the perfect balance between a studio cut and a live version. So shout out to Sigma Oasis. Absolutely. That's a good call to mention that, Justin.
Yeah.
And check out Everything's Right off that, I would say, would be the number one track. Makes you feel good.
one of the tracks on there that opens up a lot of melody and leaves a lot of room for them to jam live. I've heard a lot of people don't like it, but Mercury was like, that's a total vibe for me, man.
I like Mercury a lot too.
The vocals in that, it's
so
the
we
lyrics,
we should probably talk about the fact that one of the sponsors of the podcast for this week that they didn't supply us with a big enough generator, so we probably need to increase our marketing costs for them, is OnlyLee.com.
Yes.
Son of a bitch.
Shout out. Only Lee, you fucked up on the generator.
Thanks for the help, but we could have used a little bit more AC here, Lee Stamper.
Yes.
All that being said, Lee Stamper, not your guy. He doesn't care what the fuck the Red Queen is wearing, regardless of Vermillion or not.
He's not a Mercury guy, huh?
No, I mean...
No, he switched up on it.
Yeah.
He didn't like it when I first
did not like
it
at first. I shouldn't throw him under the bus.
That's what I think I remember.
Yeah, because I think he has come around on it.
Painted in Vermillion.
Yeah. But all that being said, listen, if you're already involved with Fish, or maybe you paused this podcast and you listen to Billy Breeze and then you listen to some other things and then you replayed the podcast and you're like, this is really good, you guys, but what should I do next?
Yes, let's talk about that. Let's talk about, in my opinion, the true snub, okay? I think if there's one of these albums that's going to be on this list, it needs to be this next one, which is a live one, okay? Released in 94?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
And it's exactly what it sounds like.
No, no. No?
Is it, was it after that? Was it 90?
I think it was 95. I think it was 95, because all of those were recorded in fall tour of 94, with the exception of that Stash, which was from Great Woods.
Yep, released June 27th, 1995. So recorded, between July and December, all the way up to New Year's Eve, 1994. Yeah. But it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a collection of some serious gems of live cuts from Fish shows. And it's from variety of shows, but they kind of weave it together and make it cohesive, make it run from one song to the next and sound like it's actually at a concert.
Yeah. So after that fall tour, from what I read, after the fall tour, everybody got together and they basically went through all the shows and they picked out, like, they flushed out what their favorite cuts were from some of the shows. And then they just weeded that list down to basically the entries that wound up on there.
Yeah.
With the exception of Stash. And I guess Stash was like a 90, whatever crowdsourcing would have been called in 94 or 95. But apparently the boys got wind of what people were doing on a message board and people started to nominate other songs that they liked because they knew that this was getting put together.
Other versions?
Yes. And so that's how Stash wound up on that list.
That's pretty cool.
Great Woods. Yeah.
Because that was a great version of Stash.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we just talked about Billy Breeze. And Billy Breeze is an album where, like I said, it's Fish's probably most cohesive and strongest pure studio effort. Like, they're not just recording themselves. They are setting out to make a studio album. And that is great, okay? But that is not what Fish is all about and what Fish is known for. Fish is known for their live shows. If you want to truly experience them, you can listen to studio albums all day, and you might really dig it. You might not dig it, but if you go to a concert, I almost guarantee that you are going to dig it, because that is their bread and butter. That is what it's all about.
Yep.
So, like, really, people that say they don't like Fish, I almost discredit their opinion until they've seen a show. If they've seen a show and they say, yeah, I still don't like it, totally cool. Yeah. I respect that 100%. But if you're just telling me that you don't like them, but you've actually never experienced them, because that's the true way to experience them. You're not really getting the effect without seeing them live.
I want to say, like, I've read, seen, like, I've heard so many things about how Trey talks about how important the crowd is, you know, to their shows and whatnot.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that's the biggest selling point of, if you say you don't like Fish, see them before you make that judgment call, only because the role that the crowd plays and the role that the way that the crowd interacts with the band, they almost inform each other. It's creepy in a way how it just feels like.
It's an energy, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. Trey's a wizard. The, like, he, it, I don't know. He just almost always seems to kind of find that right spot to itch, right? Yeah. During a set. And so,
yep. But so a live one is just a collection of serious gems. And
what's your standout? What's your favorite?
The Stash is super great. The Wilson that's on that is one of my favorite versions of that song
as
well.
This entire album is just heater after heater. Like, the way that they compiled it, the song list that they did put on it, and if Stash got thrown on there last, like, it was worthy.
Yeah.
Everything on here is a banger.
Well, and I, based on a conversation that Sean and I had earlier, definitely the shout out to the gumbo that's on there, because yep. The gumbo that's on there has a feature from the Big Country Horns.
Yep.
And Fish with Horns is, whew, next level. They've only done it a couple of times.
Well, they did it for a whole tour in 1992, 1993.
Oh, was it the Big Country Horns?
The Giant Country Horns, yeah.
Wow, mm-hmm. Nice. Well, they also did that in Indio. I think at Festival 8 they had horns.
They came back. I think it was still the Giant Country Horns.
And a Halloween show, too.
Have been as early as 91, actually.
Wow.
But yeah, they did like a whole tour with them.
Well, and Quadrophenia had horns, too, didn't it?
Probably.
I think so.
No.
I mean, they bust them out every once in a while, and it's really, really good. So,
yeah. So, yeah, a live one, Tweezer. The Tweezer on that is like 30 minutes long. Yeah.
It's deep.
Just shy of 31, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, they go into really, that's a very exploratory Tweezer on there. I mean, they just really take that thing on a ride and go into different quarters.
That Slave to the Traffic Light is a jam, too.
Yeah, it's really blissy.
Yeah.
Really, and I like that you said exploratory, because that's really what is going on here with Fish.
In a live setting, for sure.
Yeah, a lot of people are thinking that it's noodly, you know, but it's not. If you really lock in and listen, they are listening to each other. They are responding to each other. They're having musical conversations. They are not just noodling. It's not just mindless guitar soloing. It is spontaneous musical communication going on.
And it's a very, very good way to bridge the gap, I feel like, between Junta and Billy Breeze, even showing kind of the crossover between that composition stuff tied in with the big jams and all that exploratory jamming.
Well,
solos and stuff.
And so the other thing that I was reading on Wikipedia about a live one that I found was really funny is that if you listen to a live one, they did a remarkable job of taking all these songs that were, every single song was from a different show, every single one, but they weave them together in a way that it feels like an actual show. Even at the end of the first disc, Trey closes out, what's the end of that first disc?
I want to say it's YEM, right?
No, it's Slave to the Traffic Light. End of that Slave to the Traffic Light, Trey's like, all right, we'll be back after a short break. And then the crowd kind of hums down, and then that crowd noise stays in, and then it basically picks up with Wilson, right? But then whenever you get to the tail end of the disc, which the last one is the Squirming Coil, at the end of the Squirming Coil, Trey's like, thank you all, we've had a wonderful night, we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
And so it plays out like a live show, you know. Now, granted,
but that set break's really the only kind of like downtime you have.
Yes.
Like typically, you know, at the show when they're calling what song they're going to do and talking in between.
Yeah.
The flow is just so much, I don't want to say better, because the energy in between songs is almost like, I don't know, the anticipation of what they're going to play.
Of what they're going
to
play.
It's just as much fun as listening to them playing.
Yeah, because
and it's fun as hell to watch you guys, especially being like as deep and knowledgeable about all the material, like, just trying to figure out and like
what
call
it is.
Some just gem that's going to be busted out.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So, I mean, as far as a live one goes, I've listened to this record probably 1,000 times. I recently got it on vinyl, which I'm pretty excited about. And like, even just listening to it now on like a full analog setup, like, it's just totally, totally different. And it, you know, different kind of way than I've listened to it before. And the first time I spun it, I just feel like the first song bouncing around the room, like, it just, they come out, and that one's just always been such a favorite of mine. And you know,
how played last night, shout out,
they did play it last night.
I know.
Yeah
Which I was still very excited about, but like, no, for as far as this record itself, just like that first song, it can just suck you in, and I can't really understand how you wouldn't just want to listen to the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
Absolutely.
Okay, so for me, I'm with you.
You could arguably say that, Justin, about every, like, the first 30 seconds of every song.
Yeah.
That's okay, fair. So I am going to agree with JB 100% at this point in that this is the snub from the three that we're talking about.
Yeah, especially given that there's precedent now to have live albums on the list. Like, if you're going to put a Who live album, in addition to several Studio Who records, like, Phish, regardless of whether you like Phish or not, Phish is undeniably one of the most significant live music phenomenons that will ever exist. No doubt about that. You can't discredit that. The following that they've built up over a 35 plus year career, the massive catalog that they have, the whole culture that surrounds their entire existence, you know, it's undeniable. Like I said, one of the most significant musical phenomenons of the 21st or 20th century, you know?
I think that you would have to say that outside of the Grateful Dead, they're probably the greatest touring rock band in the United States. Yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. Certainly one of the most prolific when you just think about how many shows these guys have played and what they've done at all of these shows, the way that they've just really, really explored the art of musical improvisation.
Yeah.
It's fucking magic across multiple genres. And
they're just getting better.
Yeah. Man.
All the time.
That they're doing, yes. The stuff that they ripped off these past two nights in Deer Creek have been unreal. The first, that Friday night, it's such, I don't want to say it's a modern approach, but the effects and the sounds that they're using as far as synths and stuff now is unlike anything I heard from a lot of the earlier stuff.
Yeah.
And it's I don't want to say it's a way that they want to stay relevant, but it's a good way that they are staying relevant. And a lot of the younger crowd and the new people, I think, that are getting into Phish, because you still get almost some drops can have like a little bit of a hip hop vibe to them when Phish is just ripping out subs and samples throughout the whole thing. And then you get those real spacey EDM sounds from Paige.
From Paige.
Well, like you said, you don't want to say it's like an attempt to be a modern approach. That's part of what makes Phish so interesting, is they're never satisfied. They're never like, you know what? This is it. Let's just keep doing exactly this from now on, because we can ride on these coattails for the rest of our entire career. They absolutely could. You know, they certainly could. And everybody would still go. But they are not satisfied with that, and they never will be. Every year, they are trying to push the bounds and do new things. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes the loving crowd is maybe not as into what they're coming up with. But that's why they keep exploring, you know. Yeah. And sometimes they hit on gold, and when they do, it really works.
Yeah, I mean, I think JB pretty much summed up what I was going to say, but, you know, Sean's right, JB's right. Like, you know, we've been seeing them for years and years now, and, like, every, you know, like, Friday night show especially was like seeing them for the first time.
Yeah.
But it's your 50th time.
I know.
Like, it's, yeah.
It just feels so crazy that, like, I grew up listening to this music. Like, my parents were listening to Phish when I was a kid. So, I mean, I grew up listening to albums like Junta when I was in the car when I was, you know, 10. And it just seems so crazy to me that here I am, you know, almost 30 now, and out on, like, seeing some Phish shows. And that band that I listened to, when I think back, it feels so long ago. They are still reinventing themselves today, you know, and they're not even that old, you know?
No. I mean, they're, early 50s. Early 50s, mid 50s, like, tons of time. And the reason why I don't think it's like them trying things new. I don't think it's them trying to be relevant. What I think it is these guys are players, but they're just as much listeners, you know? Like, if you think about, like, Sirius XM has the Phish radio channel, and, like, John Fishman's show on there, The Errant Path. You want to know why Fishman is such a fucking maniac and why he can play all those styles and all those different polyrhythms and everything else he's doing? Jesus, listen to the music that he's listening to. I mean, it's wild, the stuff that guy listens to. Paige McConnell just released a new solo effort. And that's the other thing. All of these guys pretty much have side piece projects that they do. And I think some of the like real exploration that they're doing on some of their side piece projects, they bring back home, you know, and well, they yeah, work it back into the band.
Yeah. And they end up playing those solo efforts live with
yeah, the band. With yeah. the band. And that's something, I mean, it seems really unique to me that you have this band that if you want to play a song that's really made by the Trey Anastasio band, nobody gets pissed off. If it's a Mike Gordon band song, everybody's down. If it's a Vita Blue song, everybody's down.
Yeah.
It's just a really, I don't know. It's four guys that make one, you mm-hmm. know?
Oh yeah. They're all so essential. That's the thing. Like this band couldn't be what it is with, if you take one member out.
Yeah. Know? It changes indelibly.
And that leads me back to the thought of standing there Friday night, eating every single word almost I said about this band before I saw them. Like, I even remember in a text saying, like, dude, I prefer Tab at this time. Only because I'm just a sucker for horns as well. And the harmonies that they do in there with that, the backing vocal sections of that.
Yeah.
It was just appealing to me at the time. And I think that was just me getting my feet wet, you know?
Yeah.
Just, I don't want to say I didn't like them.
You were dabbling.
But I wasn't a fan yet, you yeah. know? And I was just, yeah.
Are you now?
Oh, 100%. 100%. See this band live.
Yeah. And listen, if you've listened to a couple of the studio albums and you want to dig a little bit deeper, this is the best. This is like the next best deep dive is a live one.
A live one.
Like,
yep.
That's really, if you want to get a feel for what a show is like, that's where you need to go. And then if you dig that, then you need to go to a show.
Yeah.
Need to do it.
100%.
Yeah, so before we wrap this up, do you want to give some breadcrumbs? Do you want to talk in any more depth about some of the selections that we were going to talk about?
I feel good about this being a snub episode primarily focused on the albums that we talked about. But I do think we should just drop these jams that we came up with.
Oh, yes. You do yours.
Yeah.
We'll kind of swap these back and forth.
Absolutely. So we figured, if some of you are listening to this and looking for maybe a chance to kind of foray into the Phish world a little bit, we picked out some famous and some not famous that just happened to mean a lot to us, editions of songs that mostly have kind of longer jams and show you what Phish really does in a live setting. Okay. And the first one we picked out was the Tahoe Tweezer is what it's called. A song called Tweezer. And it was played at Lake Tahoe in 2013. And you can find that if you just basically look up Phish Tweezer, July 31st, 2013. Or you can also just go to YouTube and type in Tahoe Tweezer and
you'll find the video.
It's 37-minute version of that song, but yep. It's not mindless noodling. They're communicating the entire time. They're back and forth. They're listening to each other. They're building off each other's ideas, and they're basically using each other as springboards to see what kind of territory they can get into.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's fun to juxtapose what they do in the Tahoe Tweezer with the live one Tweezer. Cause you're talking about 15 years separation between those two tweezers.
Yeah.
And you can really kind of see the way that even on a song like Tweezer, which is really just, for lack of a better phrase, it's a jam vehicle, right?
Yeah.
In other words, it's a song that, you know, the first 3 minutes are always the same, but then who knows where it's going to go from there. And what they did back in 94 on a live one, and if you compare and contrast or juxtapose that with what they did in 2013, you can really see a huge evolution of sound and playing and musicianship. So
yep.
Certainly worth checking out.
That, if you go back and listen to any old performance of Bathtub Gin and then rip off the Bathtub Gin that they just pulled off a few nights ago,
whew.
Look at the evolution
from Nashville.
Of where it goes,
yeah.
Where it starts and where it ends up. And it might not even end up there now, but it'll circle back around.
Amen.
And just watching the evolution of the performance and how the song doesn't even change. It just gets morphed based on what they're doing before they lead into it,
mm-hmm.
and where they're going with the night. You know what I mean? It just
yep.
sets a vibe for how they perform
yeah.
whatever song they choose to perform.
Yeah. I mean, they're really driving the feel for the audience. My selection that I think that everybody that if you've jumped in the water and you're not quickly exiting the pool, You need to check out what's called the Boise Bag. And it's from September 14th, 1999, a show that was played in Boise. It was Boise in that tour, because it was a West Coast tour, but Boise was kind of out of the way for a lot of folks. And it was one of those shows that, I'm not going to say it was poorly attended, but there were a lot of people that were following the band on tour that year that were like, ah, fuck,
do we skipped really on
wanna,
that one.
Yeah, do we really want to go to Boise just to come back to fucking Portland or, you know, Eugene or wherever they were going to next? And a lot of people bailed on it, but they dropped a mind-numbingly fucking crazy second set. And the highlight of that second set was the second song. It was roughly a 28 minute version of AC/DC Bag, which, by the way, you're not going to find that on any studio albums. Is that on the white tapes?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess technically you would see that on kind of a studio release. But, you know, Phish has a lot of tracks that they only play live. You've never heard them if you've only listened to the studio tracks. And AC/DC Bag is tangentially one of those. But the where they go on that Boise Bag is, man, it's crazy. I mean, they really utilize a lot of different textures. It has a very discordant and kind of minorish type feel. Mike Gordon is, I think you're right. Like JB and I were talking about it earlier. Mike Gordon's definitely the MVP of the Boise Bag with what he's doing on bass, really kind of driving where that jam goes. And it's good. Really, really, really good.
Very good. Yes. Yeah.
So check that one out.
The next one was brought up by Justin Jantis. You want to talk about that, or you want me to bring it up?
Well, you can introduce the date and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Something to say about it, yeah.
So this was one of their newer tunes. This is called, and it's not even really a tune, but we'll talk about that a little bit more. This is a song called Martian Monster, which the version that we selected was December 31st of 2014. So a New Year's Eve version of this song. Was the second appearance of this song, the first being Halloween of that same year. And for those unaware, for Phish Halloween shows, they do some kind of special stuff. So they usually play three sets, whereas normally Phish plays two sets. And so for their middle set, they are covering another album in its entirety, is kind of traditionally what they do, is they pick an album. They've done the Beatles, the White Album. They've done the Who's Quadrophenia. They've done Talking Heads, Remain in Light. They've done Rolling Stones, Exile on Main Street. Just a lot of these big heavy hitters, you know.
Little Feet
Waiting for Columbus. Yeah.
Bowie.
Yeah, they did Ziggy Stardust. But for this year, this was Halloween 2014 in Las Vegas. They decided that instead of covering a famous rock album, they picked this Disney record that was released in the 60s.
Yeah.
And it was called Chilling Thrilling Sounds of the Haunted House. And it was basically like a fun soundtrack of...
Like a Halloween soundtrack.
A Halloween soundtrack of kids. Silly little voiceovers talking about various Halloween-y subjects, you know?
Or spooky subjects.
Martian monsters and evil cats and
dogs.
And very long fuses with big bombs. Yeah.
It was really a brilliant idea, and it was a way for them to just have a lot of fun.
And basically they wrote songs that went along with each of these. They took each you know, snippet from the record, and they wrote a piece of music to go with it. Some of them are fairly simplistic, but they are very good.
Yeah.
And Martian Monster was one of those.
Yeah, so the simplistic nature of, you know, what they wrote to be that just allows for a lot of exploration and kind of jamming within it. And, you know, that music that is composed, it just leads to some of, you know, my favorite, you know, live exploration. It also has a special meaning. Like, actually, I get to do the quintessential mom shout out. My mom and sister are listening live. So, hi, mom. but no, so when I was getting...
They're listening right now?
They are, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so they said
hi, Justin's mom.
Hi, guys.
My sister's on, too. And so
hi, Justin's sister.
are you still very short?
She is still very short.
Okay.
Yeah. Last time I saw.
Why doesn't she grow anymore?
She's little.
Have you tried growing?
Have you tried stretching her?
I actually
get the sister stretcher.
I bend her in all kinds of chicken neck bone, chicken wings, and I torture her.
I'm sorry. Love you. We've devolved.
Yes.
But no, so like introducing her to fish and you know, I'm gonna see her in Atlantic City, which is exciting and stuff, but like we had the record, the Chilling Thrilling Sounds record, so we like listened to that, and then I played her Martian Monster, and like that's kind of really I think where she was like, all right, let's do this.
That's yes. Awesome. So. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Love it.
I think a good
thing to say about that Martian Monster, if anybody's like, huh, I wonder what that could be about.
Your trip is funky.
If you want to shake your butt, throw that thing on.
Your trip is short.
Tell me that is not fun as hell.
Bomb, bomb.
Yeah.
And just bomb, bomb.
Using
bomb, bomb.
Oh, man.
Your trip is short.
Watch Trey.
Your trip is short.
Get down on that vocal effect and tell me that's not one of the funnest things you've ever seen anybody doing.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. If you don't like fun, don't go to a fish concert.
Stay away from us.
Stay away. Stay away from all of us. Okay. So, two more selections next. For you real quick. The next one is super, super famous. I don't think it's necessarily exceptionally meaningful to any of us, but I know that within the community,
it's highly regarded.
Yeah. There's just so much love for, The Great Went, which was Fish's first festival from 1997.
Second festival,
my bad.
After the Clifford Ball.
That's right. Clifford Ball was in 96. In 97, they went up to an abandoned Air Force base in Maine, and they held a two-day festival up there. They called it The Great Went. And on August 17th of 1997, they did about a 15-minute version of Bathtub Gin. And it's now been dubbed the Went Gin, right? As in the Great Went and the gin from the Great Went. And just really, really highly regarded. It's not a super long, like deep, complex jam, I would say.
No.
But it is a jam that is, it builds in a way that it is really special. Like, it's clean, it's pretty, and the way that it just stacks on top of itself and builds and builds and builds to its conclusion is, it's magic, you know? And I know that it's nostalgic for a lot of people, especially those that were in attendance.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's very clean, and it's very cohesive. So mm-hmm. that's, like, the thing about that is there's nothing super flashy. There's nothing... They're not like taking it to many different territories in that one. It's pretty, stays within the song structure for the most part, but they just kind of come together so well on this just blissful build, and they just kind of continue to expand upon it, and it ends up at a really, really nice high point that it just feels so good.
Yeah.
And while it's not, you know, my favorite track or favorite, you know, recording of this track by any means, it is a really cool example. And that actually, just real quick side note, Mike was another VIP of that. Mike, the bass player, was another VIP of that song for me, because like Trey was doing some fun guitar stuff. He really was. And I feel like a lot of people were probably kind of locking in with what Trey was doing. But all that Trey was doing was just responding to the foundation that Mike was laying down.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a big thing about Bathtub Gin in particular, I think, is bass and drums choosing where that song goes.
Yeah.
That melody, the ba,
yeah.
ba, da, 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 that's Paige and Trey are just kind of like floating around that while
yep.
yes.
we're either going bump, bump, ba, bump, or we're going bump, da, bump, bump.
Yeah.
You know, find the tempo, lock in the groove, and let them play with it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
And actually, just real quick, I wanted to say, so Mike Gordon, the bass player, he just posted a little video on his Instagram page the other day talking about how he's playing bass these days. And it made me think of the way that he was playing on the Went Gin. So that's why I wanted to mention it. And this video that he said, he basically said something he's been doing a lot lately when he's playing bass is almost try to abandon everything he actually knows about music theory and not using that when he constructs what he's going to do. And he says at times, you know, other times he's certainly using every, you know, shotgun in his arsenal. Yeah, with the music theory. But he says sometimes he likes to just pick a really, really simple set of notes, almost like lullaby-esque.
Yeah,
almost
like a nursery rhyme.
Nursery rhyme-esque. He says, pick a couple notes, play them together. He says, and at first maybe it doesn't sound like much, but he says, keep doing it. And he just plays it over and over again. And he said, eventually it yields, is what he said. Yeah. He said, eventually it yields and it starts to take on life of its own.
And then, maybe it morphs a
little bit. Yes.
Maybe exactly. I'll add a note here or maybe do a little flourish here. It was really, it's fun because he's a super interesting, introspective guy.
Yeah.
And he really likes to interact with people, especially on Instagram. And like he posts a lot of those on Twitter too. And yeah. So that's kind of where I catch him. And it's fascinating, but
it's cool to hear him say that too, because it almost, it's like a beginner approach, and I'm sure we can relate to that as musicians. Like we still have little things that you've been plinking around on since you were 15.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that never really ceased. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They haven't taken flight, but it's like there's something there.
There's something there.
I
just gotta let it
out yet.
Just gotta let it go until it yields.
I need to sit down and show it to JB and
that's right.
Have him work this thing out with me.
Deal.
All right, so one more.
Last one.
Yep.
The last one was Back on the Train from August 15th, 2011, which was actually my first song at my first Fish show.
Shout out.
Yeah, that was my first Fish show, one with my parents and my friend Justin Handel. So, and he's a guy that I've been to probably the most Fish shows with, you know, of any of my friends. And we walked in, we almost got in late. We walked in like as they were starting this song, and we immediately kind of were able to make our way towards the front. We had the floor tickets, and this song was maybe 8 minutes long. It's not super long, but it's almost a masterclass in how to build a guitar solo. So for those like guitar nerds out here who are learning about, you know, like trying to build their guitar solos and stuff like that, go check this one out, because the way he does it, it's almost formulaic, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Like he builds to a certain note, he builds to the root note for those music theory enthusiasts out there, and then he kind of does that a couple times, and then he creates some tension and builds to the fifth above that, and then that's the second big drop, and then beyond that he goes and he builds to the octave above that, and it all takes place within about 8 minutes, and it's just a series of climaxes, and I was pretty much sold after seeing that one song.
It's a beautiful example of what you would call like a type one jam, or a jam that stays within like the traditional chord structure of the song,
yeah.
Right, of the meat of the song. That's kind of what a type one jam is in Fish parlance, versus a type two, which just means that they go wherever they want to go and the music kind of takes on a life of its own. But that one, like you said, the build, it's tricky, because when you think that you've got to the top of the mountain, fooled you.
Yeah.
And
they
keep
climbing. It a little higher.
Yeah. Yep. And it happens a couple of different times. And when you can do that over 8 minutes, and especially when you're doing that to lead off a show,
yeah.
Get out Opener. Of here. It's a party.
It was.
Have fun. Get back on the train.
Get back on the train. Exactly. So, again, thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah,
and if
absolutely.
You want to check out some of those jams, we'd love to hear what you think of them. So send us an email, thislistsucks@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Send us a voice message at anchor.fm/thislistsucks.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for putting up with this episode. If you don't happen to be a Fish fan, thank
Super
you to
sorry.
Justin and Sean for joining us.
Thank absolutely. You, guys. Super yeah. happy to be here. Thanks for bringing me.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. These guys will both be back on the show.
Bye, and Justin's mom.
Bye, Justin's mom. Bye, Justin's sister. And with that being said, I think that it's time for some Sunday fun day. Time to get rid of some of this swamp ass and time to do one last night of fishing.
Yes. Goodbye.
See you next time.
Peace.
This list sucks. This list sucks. This list sucks. This list sucks. It sucks.